Welcome to another episode of Romance Romp. I'm your host, Keeney Allen. Today I have romantic suspense author J.L. Laura. She says she writes romantic suspense, dark romance, crime, right?
Yes.
Okay. So thank you for joining me. So first, tell me a little bit about yourself as a reader. How did you get into reading romance?
First, thank you for having me.
Sure.
I got into romance. I came to the United States when I was 13 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a lonely time. And then around the age of 16, we moved. And a friend of mine was reading books. And her sister was reading Sweet Valley High. And she asked me to return the book to the library for
her.
And that was my first experience. And then I was like, you know, I'm a little too sophisticated for this. I need something a little... I mean, you know, at 16, you're like super sophisticated.
So. Sure.
So I was wandering around the library, and I found some romance books. I think my first book was, I think it's Define Not the Heart by Joanna Lindsay.
Okay.
And I read them all in Spanish first. Like, I read a bunch of romances in Spanish.
Oh, okay.
Because I didn't, like, know how to navigate the way to the English section yet.
Mm-hmm.
And then I discovered the English ones. And
okay.
Yeah.
So, first, I would say I'm not a big historical romance reader.
Mm-hmm.
I mostly read contemporaries. So, but to try to think about, okay, a historical, not only just a historical, but then in Spanish.
Yes. Yeah, there were some funny titles. Like, once I read, like, I moved on to, like, Jude Devereaux, like,
mm-hmm.
I saw the titles in Spanish and then the titles in English, and I, like, it was like a big frown. I'm like, that doesn't coordinate much, but but it was interesting. Like, at first, that's all I read. I read all historicals,
mm-hmm.
and I read, like, a million of them, and then I moved on to more contemporary stuff.
Okay. So then how long have you been an author of romance?
I started writing first fan fiction.
Okay.
Because I always said I wanted to be a writer.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, at first you're shy, so I was trying the waters a little bit. And I finally decided to go original about 2 years ago.
Okay.
Yes.
So why did you pick, like, romantic suspense, dark romance?
Because this is what I started to like. Later on, like, I realized that I like romantic suspense a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
I like the story. There's a killer on the loose.
Mm-hmm.
There's some bad people around, and there's two people falling in love, and there's all this tension, and it builds up and it builds up to the end. And then, like, once you start, like, you can't stop yourself. You have to keep reading and keep reading and keep reading until the end, and then it's over, and you're like, oh, I want more. So,
yeah.
So that's how I got started. And then once I started writing, I was like, it's what came natural to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like contemporary doesn't come as natural as suspense does.
Okay. And you said, like, with the dark romance, we were saying before mm-hmm. we kind of got started, you do a lot of, like you said, mob or mafia or...
My book is organized crime, yeah.
Organized crime, okay.
Yeah, because it was dark romance. Somebody helped me coin it, what exactly I was reading about a year ago. And they're not necessarily the goodest of good people.
Sure.
there's a dark line. Like, I don't want to say gray because, you know, it's...
Mm-hmm.
It's not 50 Shade-ish.
Right.
But, you know, it's not black and it's not white. It's just something in the middle, in
right.
the spectrum.
Sure. Yeah, my sister and I were talking just this past weekend about books and what she was looking to read. And mm-hmm. She prefers kind of like a darker romance, mm-hmm. one where we were talking about like Stockholm Syndrome
yeah.
and like kidnapped and stuff like that. And I was like, that's not really my thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, as with romance, there's so much out there and it's somebody's thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was giving her a couple of authors. So when I saw yours, I was like, oh, I'll have to let her know.
Oh, thank you.
<You're welcome>.
Thank you.
So what do you love to read about in your books? Like, or what is it that you love about the romance genre?
It is a lot of different things.
Mm-hmm.
Romance for me is a lot more than just, like, the reading. It's been a catalyst in my life. Mm-hmm. A lot of things have changed because of romance. Like, you know, it's come at a time when I've been either down or going through something, and reading has helped me get through that. Mm-hmm. And it also helped me learn the language.
Okay.
Like, it was, you learn some technical stuff, but there's some stuff that you can't get until you practice, mm-hmm. until you read, until you submerge yourself into it. And romance was what got me from the point where I was translating everything that was said to me to me just interpreting it, like, okay. without even have to think about it. Mm-hmm. So that's how I began. That's what I started to love about it. And also, you know, there's the stories, there's this tension between the hero and the heroine. Mm-hmm. Like, from the beginning to the end, like, there's this thing that builds up, and that's what I really love about it. Like, the women are strong. Everybody will tell you I'm kind of a feminist. So I love the strong women and the fact that in the stories, unlike in real life, these men are about these women, about, mm-hmm. you know, it's the woman that has the power.
Right.
All throughout the book, even if he's a bad boy or if he's whatever he is, mm-hmm. the woman is the one with the power. In mm-hmm. the end, it's about pleasing her.
Right.
It's about her happiness. Mm-hmm. So that's the other thing that I
Right, which love. In romance, so first of all, two things.
Yeah.
Number one, I think a lot of people say you can't be a feminist and read romance, and that's so not true.
No, it's not.
Not at all. You know, and I think because it is so female driven, mm-hmm. authors for women, you know, the stories focus on women, mm-hmm. That, you know, the bulk of it is feminist, even if it's not intended to be so.
Yeah.
So I love it.
Yeah.
But also, I love in my books when the hero, good guy, bad guy, doesn't really matter. But mm-hmm. when he falls hard for the woman and has to work for it.
Yep.
You're right, because she holds the power, and not like in a negative.
Yeah.
I'm in charge, but just like, mm-hmm. yeah, it's so female centric, and I love it.
Yeah, I can agree with that. And, you know, it's. You have a genre, like, finally dedicated to us. Mm-hmm. It's not like we don't, like, it's all about her.
Right.
Like, even though the relationship's about the two of them, even though the book is about both of them, mm-hmm. it's mostly about the female. And I always said, even when I watch TV and stuff like that, if you are able to love the female character, you can fall in love with a pairing, because mm-hmm. there's going to be hot guys, it's going to be, like, you know, sexy and big time guys, but you have to believe that that girl is going to give you that pull,
right,
in the whole story. And that has always been it for me, because even like in the medieval romances, you see that, like, the girl defies them. Mm-hmm. She defies the big bad guy that, you know, he's killing like 25,000 people, but there's this little girl that's like half his size, and, you know, she won't give him the time of day, and he's so miserable because of that.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And also, I think you mentioned it, and I just wanted to touch on it again. There's not any other genre that focuses on the woman getting what she wants.
Yes.
Whether we're talking about the man, whether we're talking about, like, sexually.
Yes.
Just everything. But that is so central to what romance is.
Yes.
And being aware that the woman deserves whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And I think culturally we aren't, I think it's getting better, but we as women haven't always been taught that we deserve these things. So to read about it, it's like it can be
freeing.
Yeah. Very freeing. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. To be like, yeah, I do deserve whatever it is, like a good job, a decent partner, whatever.
Yeah. A man that's there for me.
Right.
That is not only like we're having sex, or, you know, I'm sitting here and this is my role, this is your role.
But right.
Like, you know, you respect what I'm saying. And, you know, a lot of people say things like this, that romance teaches women the wrong expectations.
Right.
And I think in itself, that's like a put down thought. That's
absolutely.
That's a belittling thought, because we know what the difference between a fantasy and real life.
Absolutely.
But there are certain things that shouldn't be compromised at the same time.
Right. But it's just a reinforcement, yeah, of like, mm-hmm. I mean, on TV, we want to see healthy relationships between men and women and all that. And so romance, the genre of books, it's just another extension of that. But I think, you know, because people have this perception that it's like all about sex and that's all it is, and like a mommy porn, but it's not that.
No, it's a lot more than that. Like, honestly, I don't read it. I mean, we like our spicy scenes.
Sure.
I'm not gonna lie, but the journey is the journey.
Right.
Like, I think I heard Melinda tell you that it's about the journey, and that is so much. It's like me, I cannot write a book. I cannot read a book that is only gonna give me sex.
Right.
I mean, let's be honest, we could get that anywhere.
Right.
But I need the unique journey. I need her to be strong. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm tired of seeing women who are like just being dominated and walked on. I mean, to be honest, we see that all the time in life.
Right.
But so you want to see somebody strong, somebody that represents, like, that is my favorite thing. If the girl is strong and he's strong and it's a good story, I'm good to go.
Me too. Yeah, I get that. And again, you know, it's that whole like level of education to what it is and, you know, and whatever, people will still think whatever they want to think.
Yeah, but they will.
Yeah. And, you know, I've never met like another group of people, like the romance readers, bloggers, authors, everything that I've come across, that are just so welcoming. And we're not exactly like-minded, but we have some similarness with us, and it's just nice.
It's so true. Somebody said it at RWA Nationals last year that the romance community is like the most giving community there is. Like, it's kind of humbling, like, when you're meeting authors somewhere, and they're like big time authors, but they'll take the time.
Mm-hmm.
And if you need help with anything, people are stepping in, and you'll be like, I don't know what this is. And they'll be like, well, this is where it is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is how you do a Facebook ad. This is how. And it translates to the work, because I think this is a sisterhood, isn't it? And, you know, there's brothers too.
Of course.
We don't want to offend you, but
it's mostly a sisterhood.
Yes, like, it's mostly a sister, but like, let's say a fraternity.
Small, yeah.
Yes. So, yeah, like, I think the word translates.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't matter what you write, there is a genre, there is a section for you.
Mm-hmm.
There's somewhere where you can find where you belong.
Right. So. Yeah, I get that. And a lot of times I feel like it comes back to women helping other women. I know that there are men out there, too, and I don't mean to exclude them, but they are a minority of readers and authors of romance. I know they're there.
Yes.
I'll find them. Yes. I'll get them on the podcast. I haven't found them yet. But, yeah, it feels good. So tell me a little bit about your book, Boss, that's going to be released on March 6th.
Boss is the first of my trilogy. The trilogy is called The Trinity. And I'll tell you a little bit about The Trinity first so I can seg into Boss.
Okay.
The Trinity is about three women.
Mm-hmm.
They're strong women. They grew up together in a small town in Maryland, and then they grow up to be this strong force in New York.
Okay.
Like, life pushes them into a life that they never wanted, because it's a life that had destroyed them, their families in the past. And they never thought they would end up this way.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to survive, they had to band together. The first one is Carissa's book, which is Boss. And she goes from being a small-town girl to, like, a mafia queen. She's the boss in organized crime in New York. She ends up being, you know, the head leader.
Okay.
And she meets this guy. And before that happens, she meets this guy in Miami. She's running away from this crime boss in her hometown.
Okay.
And she meets this guy that, you know, is a little sexy. They're in a club. You know, they kiss and they're flirting. And a machine gun goes off.
Mm-hmm.
And all these things start happening. And that's how Carissa ends up being the boss eventually.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, no. I was just making a note to remember something. So
okay, no problem. So that's how she becomes the boss. It's a tale of two alphas, alpha female, alpha male. There's the push and pull.
Mm-hmm.
They're passionate. My Alec is, you know, it's a guy's guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he's used to being a boss. And, you know, she's a boss. So mm-hmm. the whole struggle between them is a fight, like a dance and a fight at the same time.
Sure.
And in the end, they have to either come to a compromise or it'll just go the wrong way.
Right. So that's interesting. I don't think that you see the alpha female a lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm like trying to do a quick run through of all books in my head, and yeah. I'm very few and far between.
Yeah.
Do you see that?
Yes.
So I'm very intrigued.
Thank you.
So you brought a little bit, and we're going to do something different, and I'll read it today.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay.
Starting there.
At the top.
Okay. All right. So here we go. So my brother's really into your friend. Carissa's hand flew to her chest. Immersed in her own thoughts, he'd caught her unaware. In the sultry moonlight, his features were striking. His eyes were not one shade, but the exact place where blue met green. "He's not alone," finally, she said. Was that really her voice? "What's your name?" His voice, a smoky baritone, stroked her ears, and Carissa's gaze lingered on his made-for-kissing mouth. She tried to remember the name she'd made up before leaving the hotel. Her memory blank, she used the first name that came to her, Elvira. His eyes narrowed, his lips dissolving into an "I'm not buying that" bridge smirk. "I guess that would make me Tony." Heat spread up her neck and over her face. He saw right through her lie. "I'm sorry, it's from the movie I was watching before we left the room." He laughed. "I was watching that too. It's one of my favorites." She rolled her eyes and swept her hair over her shoulder. "Isn't Scarface every guy's favorite movie?" "Are you saying I'm not special?" He raised an eyebrow and moved closer to her on the wide sofa. The smell of the ocean with hints of citrus teased her nostrils. The satinwood undertones cursed a flutter in her chest. She wasn't going to flirt with him. She couldn't. "That's not what I meant." He mirrored the side-to-side movement of her head. "No?" Carissa laughed and flipped her palms up. "Everyone just seems to love that bad guy. He was a complex character." She crossed her leg over the other and hugged her knee with both hands. "Really? He was a criminal, a drug dealer who hurt people." Noah's brother braced his hand on the seat a few inches from her. "True, but he was also relatable." Carissa tilted her head to one side. "In what way?" "Take his relationship with Elvira, for example." He lowered his head toward her as if he intended to confide something. "It took one look and he had to have her." A string pulled her chest tight, tight, tight. She cleared her throat. "She was his boss's girlfriend. Not very ethical, if you ask me." "Ethical? You said yourself he was a drug dealer. You're not from Miami, are you?" "Stay cool. There's nothing wrong with a little light flirting." "No, I'm from Eden Rose, a small town in Maryland." A slight frown ghosted over his forehead. "Are you here on spring break?" "No, I'm not in school anymore. I'm here on a mini vacay. What about you?" "I'm here on business. What do you do?" Carissa shook her head. "Nothing yet. I'm looking for work." "What field?" he asked. "Human resources and entrepreneurship." "I'm impressed." His voice got deeper. "What do you want to do?" He edged his hand closer to hers, distracting her. I want to find grants for people to make money doing what they love, using what they know, what they're good at." "That's a big dream for a first job out of college." He gave her a small, patronizing smile as if she were a pageant contestant wishing for world peace. "If you're not going to dream big, why dream at all?" Okay. She wanted to facepalm as soon as the words left her mouth. Her inside squirmed like the first time she was tripped in heels at her junior prom in front of the whole school. Carissa's gaze dipped to the floor. How naive she must sound. When she looked up, her eyes met again, and there was no teasing in his. No, he looked at her like he'd zoomed a lens and magnified her. He reached for her chin, his long fingers settling on her jaw. "I love your eyes." His voice dropped to a hoarse whisper, his thumb brushing over her lower lip. Carissa's pulse galloped in her chest and chased away her breath, his touch leaving a ball of need in its wake. Indulging was not an option. Not when she'd just put her mother in the ground, not when a fake Michael Corleone back home was trying to get in her pants, not when she was so vulnerable she couldn't trust her judgment. She leaned into his touch anyway. They're just regular. No, I don't think anything about you is just regular. His voice was a silk rustle. I don't kiss fictional characters. Tell me your name. All right, thank you.
No, thank you.
That sounds very intriguing.
Thank you. Here is it. This is right at the beginning of the book. She's still very young here.
Uh-huh.
You can see what the progression between them is going at the beginning. Yeah.
So they meet originally when they're a little bit younger, or she's younger, or?
The book runs a span of about 2 years.
Okay. Okay. So what is your heat level do you typically write?
I write sensual. I don't write, it's not super hot. It's not erotic hot. Mm-hmm. And it is not sweet.
Okay.
So it's a sensual level. There's specificity going on.
Okay.
And this graphic language also.
So open door.
Yes.
Sensual.
Yes.
Like medium heat-ish.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Nothing too graphic.
What would you call too graphic?
I don't know. It's like such a blurry line,
yes.
Right?
There's graphic language. There's, you know, body parts. I go body parts.
I think that's not too graphic.
Yes.
I think, I don't know. It's so hard. And I think it's also different for each reader.
Yeah, it's spicy, sensual. That's what my publisher calls it.
So. Okay. That's good to know.
So that's good.
That's what I like. I'm reading a book now, and sometimes if it starts to feel like a little sweet, I'll do like a search to see if like certain words are in it. And I'm like, I'm not sure if this is for me.
I understand that. Yeah. This one it starts a little in the innocent side. Well, on her part, it starts a little on the innocent part, but you know, she's a girl that's lived, like, this stuff going on in her life, and it's about embracing. I think a lot of the book is about she has to embrace herself. Even when you don't choose certain things in life, unfortunately, life chooses certain things for you.
Right.
And in order to survive, she's forced to do things that she never thought she would, live a life that she would have sworn herself she wouldn't. But all in the name of protecting those people she loves.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, which is true to life.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I like that. That's what I think I shoot for that with my characters, where it's not black, it's not white, it's somewhere in between. Mm-hmm. And it ranges from one side to the next and back. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, I mean, I think that's how real life is. Yeah. Even if you kind of take out, like, the organized crime, just like in a regular person. Like, life is not always black or white. There's a lot of gray in the things that we do, the choices we make, all of that. So
exactly. Yeah. Like you can be the best person in the world, but there's going to be something about you that's like a tiny bit dark.
Right.
So,
tiny bit dark. Yes. Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Just a little. So you mentioned you've been an author for about 2 years.
Yes.
Okay. So once you finished a book, like, how has been your journey to getting that published? It's coming out in March.
Yeah.
So tell me about that.
Okay. So I finished the book around March.
Okay.
Before the book, I went through a lot of classes because that's one of the things that was important to me. Like, if I was going to put a book out there, I needed to try to make it as best as possible. I joined a critique group. So it's been critiqued. I went through Margie Lawson. And then when I finally thought, okay, I got to pitch this book, I pitched it at RWA. But, you know, it went through a lot of hands. Mm-hmm. I went through a few copies. Like, it went through a few versions. And then it got pitched. And then it takes a while. Crimson was going through changes. They merged into Simon & Schuster.
Okay.
now, and it took them a while to get back to me. They got back to me the week of Thanksgiving.
Oh, wow. So, okay.
Yeah. From, and I think it's July. Conference was in July.
Okay. Yeah. That's still, it sounds like a long time, but it also sounds like a really quick time. Yeah. Because, so if that was like Thanksgiving, it's late January now, so like 2 months, little 2.5 months.
Oh, to publish, you mean?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, it's a fast process. Uh-huh. We worked through the holidays.
Oh, okay.
Really hard.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a fast process. I've never been in it, mm-hmm. so it was a little bit overwhelming at times, very much so. But, you know, it's been such a positive experience, mm-hmm. despite the fact that, you know, the heart pounding and all that, and the anxiety. But it's been such a great experience for me. Like, you know, this is what you want. Like, you're a little girl, mm-hmm. and you dream about writing, and, you know, my book is coming out, and sometimes, like, you know, I still haven't allowed myself to, like, breathe that in because there's so much work to do, mm-hmm. on the way. But that's, you know, that's what I want to, like, now that's what I want to dedicate myself to, like, enjoying it, mm-hmm. like, even if it's hard work.
Well, yeah, so, you should enjoy it. Yeah. You know, you put a lot of work into it, and it's, like, you know, your baby.
Yeah. And, you know, even before that time, like I was saying about all the classes, like, I took so many classes. Mm-hmm. To get this book, because, you know, for me, the way the characters come, they come already formed. Like, I'll hear, like, in my head, I hear one line, and that's a character, and then I see who, like, it kind of, like, you can picture who says it, mm-hmm. how it's said, and who the person is, and little by little, like, things, but I was cognizant that that's not really how writing works either. Like, you write that out, but you have to find out, make sure that what you're writing, mm-hmm. is accurate. It's, and it works, and it's actually, like, you know, readable. Mm-hmm. So I took a whole bunch of classes. I talked to people, and I learned. I got it critiqued, which, let me tell you, is, at first, it's not the easiest thing.
Oh, I can't even imagine.
Because you, like, you think it's perfect, and you're, mm-hmm. like, here's my baby. And everybody's like, your baby's got warts. Uh-huh. And it's weird. It's a yucky brown color. So it's muddy. So you got to clean it up. But it's so good. Like, I've met such great people. It has been a wonderful experience altogether. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. So, one of the things I use Twitter a lot to connect with other readers, authors, all that stuff. Yeah. So one of the things that I think is becoming, I don't want to call it a trend because I feel like that lessens it, mm-hmm. but it's something that's becoming or having more prominence mm-hmm. amongst readers and authors and bloggers and everything is currently, I guess you'd say, like the lack of diversity in romance, mm-hmm. whether it's authors, particularly authors, and then stories and characters. So what is your kind of, as a person of color, not from the United States,
mm-hmm. yes.
originally, like, How do you try to get in over that, or, you know, overcome it? How do you see it?
Well, I'm going to speak of my own experience.
Sure.
Because the funniest part is that this week I've gotten 3 people have asked me, how come my heroine is white?
Mm-hmm.
She's a white woman. And part of the explanation is that my girls, and I call them my girls because, you know, mm-hmm. girls. My Trinity, there's a white woman, there's a black woman, and there's a Hispanic woman.
Okay.
So they mix together, and each story gets told in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
But characters come fully formed for me.
Okay.
So when she came to me, she was this blonde.
Mm-hmm.
And when the second book comes to me, she was this African-American woman.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one was a Hispanic woman. And they all came together as a pack.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe the reason for that is because it mirrors my own life. Like,
sure.
My friends are all mixed. Like, I don't have all Dominican friends. Like, I've never, ever since I came to the U.S., my friends have always been mixed.
Mm-hmm.
I have white friends. I have black friends. I have friends from the Middle East. And I think the way I see it is it's given me the perspective of love comes in so many different ways,
mm-hmm.
and in so like in so in race and color, and in the way that, you know, it's wonderful that it can come to me, and that for me it's not an issue. Like, I didn't think it was an issue until somebody mentioned it the other day, and I was like, oh, I mean, I never thought about it like that, but you know,
mm-hmm.
it happens. But I do agree that we need more diversity.
Mm-hmm.
We need more. The world, period,
right.
needs to embrace diversity because we are diverse. There's no, and it's funny because we have to explain that.
Right.
When it's here.
Yeah.
Everybody's like, you know, all races, colors, gender, everything.
Right.
Is there. So, but we're still at the point in life where we have to explain that.
Right.
And I think it's kind of sad. But in a way, it gives us an opportunity to explain it to people,
mm-hmm.
to educate people,
right.
and to be out there. And like I said, like, you know, romance gave me so many different opportunities. It gave me an opportunity to learn. It gave me an opportunity to express myself.
Mm-hmm.
It gives me an opportunity to be out there and show other people that this can be done. So the way I see it is, I think we have that responsibility of educating people. So when somebody asked me the other day, why is she white? And I'm like, well, because she is.
Right.
She came that way. It's uh-huh. the same way as you and I. We came fully formed, and that's just life.
Right. No, and I get that, and I really appreciate that. And mm-hmm. I, as a reader, I'm trying to do a better job of, mm-hmm. you know, finding more diverse books, whether it's authors.
Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to read outside of my preferred genre a little bit more. But I really, the things that I enjoy the most are when a book contains characters that, you know, there's a, you know, a Latino or
yeah.
an African American or, you know, somebody who's maybe Chinese or just anything,
yeah.
whether they're gay, they're straight, you know, they're skinny, they're fat, whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, when you look around, for me, I want my surrounding community mm-hmm. of people to be diverse.
Yeah.
So I want to see that in my books, too. And I realize that not everybody lives in a diverse area. And so I get that. But, you know, and it's very possible that somebody is reading a romance book and they have no interaction with somebody of a different culture outside of a book.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and so it can be very eye-opening, especially, I think, without trying to be too political, you know, a lot of times we tend to, TV, the news, whatever, mm-hmm. they tend to focus on the worst of
yes.
people.
Yes.
And so people kind of get this mindset that, like,
yeah.
pick a culture, whatever,
yep.
that they're all whatever. And so when, and I think books, whether they're romance or any genre, you know, they can be used to kind of break down those
yeah.
stereotypes and say, well, they're just people. They're just people who love other people.
Yeah. And that's all there really is. But it's funny that you say that because I grew up in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And in New York, it's like you see everything. Everyone is with everyone. Everyone
mm-hmm.
is friends with here. Like, you don't, like, I live in a building so diverse. It was like, you couldn't tell what, like, you could not tell because sometimes, like, you know, if you're dark skinned, like, for me, I'm a dark skinned Dominican. People think I'm either black, people think I'm from other places. And I wasn't used to, like, the lack of diversity.
Mm-hmm.
That some people, and I experienced it when I went to college, because when I went to college, my roommate took me to her town, and everybody was nice,
mm-hmm.
but her town, like, had no people of color,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, wow, and, like, you know, her parents were so welcoming, everybody was so sweet, but the only time I saw somebody of color while I went there was at the parade. I hope Jill doesn't kill me.
No.
But, yeah, but, you know, like, she, like, there wasn't that much diversity in that sense. But when you look at the campuses, like, people were so
mm-hmm.
mixed. And I was used to that. I'm mm-hmm. used to, like, everybody mixed together, and you know everybody, and you know somebody from here and from there, from everywhere. But to go from there to, like, a place where you're basically, like, you don't see that at all.
Right.
That's kind of sad in a country that is so, what do you call it? It's such a melting pot.
Right. And that's why, like, as I've become more aware of a reader, like, it becomes really hard to read books where everybody's white, everybody's straight, everybody's very thin.
Yes. No disabilities.
No disabilities. You know, nothing. And it's like, that's not a reflection of the world that I'm living in.
Yes.
And I don't want to keep reading that kind of book. Exactly. And I don't mean to, like, be down on it, but but I think the world has changed so much that I want to see that reflection in my books. It doesn't have to be every book, but I also, I'm tired of, like, the perfect blonde hair, blue-eyed heroine. And that's 28.
And she's so sweet.
And she's so sweet. And, you know, her life is just so perfect. And this man comes and sweeps her away. Like, I mean, there's nothing inherently wrong with a heroine that is blonde hair and blue-eyed. Oh, it's just that whole stereotypical, like, this is the only thing we get in the book. And it's like...
No, and I feel that, because that's one of my pet peeves, too. I think what I like about the girls that I write, like the heroines that come my way, thankfully, is that they are, can I say kick? Okay. So I can't say kick ass.
Right.
They're very kick ass. They're badass. They won't take it like this. Like Carissa at one point, he's like, oh, I can protect you. And she's like, I don't need you to protect me.
Right.
I can do my own. So I think that that's what we want to see more of, because if you think about it, for me, and I don't mean it for it to happen, but it happens because these are the women around me, like my mother, my aunts, my friends. They're all women who go out and get theirs. Like, you know, they don't sit back. Like, if there's a problem, like, you have to see the women in my family. They're like, oh, we spring to action.
Right.
Oh, the house is burning. Let me just go get the extinguisher. And, you know, go and turn off the fire.
Right.
And everybody sits back at the table. I eat. I mean, it's kind of that... that connotation, like, yeah, life is falling apart, but you, you have to pick yourself up and do things.
Right. You know, my mom used to say, like, no one is coming, right? So if I need to be saved, I need to save myself.
Yes.
And I want to see my heroines that are saving themselves, and they just also happen to be falling in love with somebody.
Yes.
And maybe they can help save each other.
Yeah.
But not necessarily, you know, where one is the damsel in distress or if it's the man. But,
yeah. No, I definitely agree with you, because my friend Angel always says that nobody's coming to my rescue, so I have to be my own hero.
Right.
Like so we always joke around with that. And, you know, think about all the stuff that you have to learn how to do, because nobody else will do it for you. And,
right.
You know, it's nice when finally somebody, like, even if it's a man, like a nice man comes to help you, but you need to learn how to do it yourself. And I think that's what we've been lacking for a long time. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think is happening more and more. Before, like, because we can't deny that the heroines of before, they had their strengths. They showed them in different ways.
Right.
But this world is more upfront. There's more, like, we're not hiding behind fans or anymore.
Right.
Like, now it's like we have to be more outward. And even I think that's even changing in some of the historical fiction. Like, you see the women be so much more, I don't want to say aggressive. Aggressive gives it a bad connotation, but assertive.
Right.
Yes.
I know what you're saying. And, I definitely see that, you know, the few historicals that I've read and most of the contemporary, where the, you know, it is varied. The woman is a stronger character.
Yeah.
And I will pretty much instantly stop reading a book if the heroine comes off as what they call, like, too stupid to live.
Yes. That is my ultimate pet peeve.
Yeah.
That is my ultimate. It drives me crazy because you want to, like, you spend more time screaming at the book, do something. Like, don't stop crying. Like, get up and do something. Don't let him do that to you.
Yeah.
Like, say something. And, like, that and... like a hero that, like, how can I explain it? Like a hero that won't let her be. Like there's some heroes that just won't let her be great. Just let her be great.
Right. Let her shine on her own.
Yeah, she can't stand up. You don't have to carry her.
Right. Yeah. I was talking to one of my other book friends the other day about romantic suspense, and mm-hmm. I said, you know, I think one of the reasons why I shy away from romantic suspense is one of the ones I read early on was ridiculous.
Uh-oh.
And, you know, they were like trapped in a jungle and their plane crashed. And I was looking for this review the other day. He was a medic and, of course, instantly they want to have sex, but she was on birth control. I don't remember how this came up in the cave, but he had also given her a shot of antibiotics, but they still had sex with no condom. And I'm like, wait a second. Every person knows that antibiotics negate birth control, but you're a medic, but like it was like no big deal. And he like miraculously had this book bag or pack that had like everything they needed in it. And I'm like, this is just ridiculous. And I know that's the thing for some people. And but so it kind of like ruined me for a while for romantic suspense. There's a few authors that I'm like, I know they're not gonna give me a cave stocked of stuff.
Yes, exactly. That's so funny though.
Yeah.
But I think it's when you have to write it where even if you're going to try something insane,
mm-hmm.
the reader has to be able to suspend. It has to be something that makes you do that. Like, I think the one person that I love reading her is Sandra Brown.
Okay.
Because she does that very well. Like, you even, stuff is happening, but you can't believe it because mm-hmm. she makes you believe that you can't believe it. Mm-hmm. It's not like something magically appears or like the girl believes everything he tells her. Like, you know, there's you see an axe, a bloody axe in a corner, and he's mm-hmm. like, oh, that's nothing. Right. I went out and that's just Kool-Aid. And she'd be like, okay, well, I'm just going to lay down on this bed and fall asleep.
Right.
Like, she doesn't do that. Like she and one of the things that she says, I asked her, we were in a chat mm-hmm. with her, and she was like, you have to do your homework and you have to be prepared. And as writers, that's the one thing, we have to be prepared for these things. Mm-hmm. We have to make sure that we don't give you a cave full of things when the island has been abandoned probably for years. So.
Right.
Or never been touched by civilization. Like, you know, we have to make sure that we do our due diligence mm-hmm. and give the reader, like, you know, a reason to be like, you know what, this may look impossible, but I don't care.
And exactly.
Yeah.
Right. And that's part of it. You know that as a book, it's not going to be true.
Yes.
But don't make it so
obvious
and so unbelievable that I'm like, there's no way this would ever happen. And then the heroine came off as being like too stupid to even live. Like, how'd she survive in that cave? She should be dead.
Yes.
And he should not be interested in her. But so I enjoy the romantic suspense or the suspense where it's like, okay, this could possibly happen. Mm-hmm. Like, and you know, like, I don't know if you've ever read Jill Sorensen.
No, I have not.
She's one of my favorite romantic suspense, and she does a really good job of making me feel like okay, this could maybe happen.
Yes.
Like, with some darker characters, and she does a lot with, like, Hispanic characters.
Oh, I gotta put her on my list.
Yeah. One of the last books I read, it had, like, some Spanish in it, and I'm like, I don't know what this means. Let me give a translator. Google Translate.
Yeah.
So I've really enjoyed her books, but, you know, all sorts of them. But, and the organized crime, I think sometimes, for me myself as a reader, a lot of times that kind of takes on that whole like BDSM thing too that I've seen in mm-hmm. books, and I'm like, I'm over.
Yeah, either one thing doesn't have to lead to the other. Like,
it doesn't, but for some reason, it seems like so many books were packaged that way.
Yeah.
And I think on the tails of the whole, or the whole 50 Shades kind of thing. Like, everything was BDSM.
BDSM, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody was a dominant man. So, right. Yeah. I mean, I think people forget, and I'm not a straight up all the time. I've read I read a couple of books of BDSM, but people forget that in a lot of it, sometimes in the culture, it doesn't mean that somebody that looks so powerful and dominant on the outside, that doesn't mean that once the doors are closed, that person is going to be that kind of powerful person inside. He may just want to relinquish the power. He may want to be dominated.
Right.
So I think that that's part of the thing that sometimes we get wrong when we only focus on one part. Yeah, like, you know, it's nice to see that, to believe that somebody that gives, that has that power of, that air of power can be that powerful in always. But sometimes, you know, maybe he's not like that, and not everything has to be that.
Yeah. Well, I think there's definitely an uptick in the trend of, like, the female domination.
Yes.
Of, like, the alpha hero who's alpha in every sense except for when the door is closed.
Oh.
Yeah. So there's a few books coming out that I've heard of that are kind of, you know, tipping that a little bit. So
That'd be interesting.
Yeah.
That'd be an interesting read. But you were talking about who else, the other person that does a great job is Julie Garwood.
Okay.
The newer ones like Heartbreaker and Mercy and Killjoy.
Okay.
Those, like, she does a very good job. Like, I remember reading Heartbreaker, and I had to read that book like 3-4 times. Read it, a month goes by, read it again, a month goes, and Mercy too, because she did such a great job building the suspense in that book. And like, the killer was writing in one of them, the killer was writing in front of your face the whole time, and like, you didn't see it until this part, and you're like, what? So she, and the thing is that I've seen people try to replicate that, but the way she wrote her villain in Heartbreaker is so good, is so well crafted, like his mental condition, that he never came off as a caricature. He came off so real and so scary because of the way that, like, the language was just right, everything else was just right about him. So
I'll have to check her out. I don't think I've ever read any of her books.
That is my Heartbreaker and Mercy are my two favorite by her.
I'll look for those.
Yeah
With this podcast, I've gotten so many recommendations for books that I've either heard of or, you know, just casually and stuff. So, you know, it just adds to my ever-growing to-be read pile.
Of course.
Reader struggle continues.
Yes.
So, now that you have a book out, like, how are you going about, like, building an audience for yourself?
That is the hardest part of everything.
That's like, what I hear.
Yes, because they tell you, everybody tells you, like, build it before. Mm-hmm. And then, like, you're like, but how? And then what happens is you get a contract and everything accelerates. Mm-hmm. Like, all of a sudden you're like, I'm looking for a publisher, or, like, I'm going to self-publish this book. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, this is happening. Wait a minute. So what I'm trying right now is build through my newsletter, get the word out, try to do cross promotions with other authors. Mm-hmm. I may have one coming really soon, which I'm very excited about.
Ooh.
Yes. So that's the kind of thing I think that is helping me right now. Because, you know, like, the other thing is we come into this with a misconception that if you get a publisher, the publisher's going to do everything.
Right.
And then, you know, things happen and you're like, oh, you have to do some of this yourself. Okay. But, you know, I'm grateful that I belong to a group that has been educating us on that. Like, the seasoned authors have been saying, you know, these are the things that you have to do. And we have, like, in Maryland romance writers, we have really good backup. So people who are teaching us. So that's been working for me. So I've been following advice. And hopefully I can continue to grow the audience as I go along.
Yeah, that's great. That seems to be the biggest struggle as I've talked to authors, is just really finding the audience. I mean, because the readers are there. It's just trying to get in front of them, and stuff like that. Because, like I was saying, for myself as a reader, I mean, every week there's like, I don't know, yes, 25 books that come out. And to be able to decide.
To stand out between right. them. Like, hi, I'm here.
Right.
And who are you?
Right. And I rely a lot on, you know, other bloggers and readers. And, you know, and I also like to follow authors. And if they seem interesting outside of their authorship, yeah, I'm like, I'll probably like their book.
Yes. And I think that's one of the things that I've done. I've been following a lot of authors. Like, I follow, I don't know how many, like, I think I found like 1,000 people or something.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So you see what they do. You're not going to copy from that, but you're going to learn and try to apply it in a way that's more unique to you. Mm-hmm. Like I can, for example, like Sarah McLean, mm-hmm, she's so snarky, mm-hmm, and adorable in her posts. Like I can't do that. Mm-hmm. that's not my personality. Mm-hmm. So I have to find a way to put myself out there and use how she's fearless about certain things, mm-hmm, and she doesn't let things stop her.
Right.
Like if she wants to say something, she'll go out and she'll say it. Mm-hmm. And like if you agree, you agree. If not, then
right.
Yeah.
I think another author that does that and does that really well is Courtney Milan. Mm-hmm. She seems to not hold back on anything, you know, and that's not my personality type,
yep, mm-hmm,
but it works. It seems to be working for her and Sarah McLean too.
Yes.
And like Sarah McLean writes for the Washington Post,
yes,
and best romance, yes, books and stuff like that. So that gives me hope that like romance is becoming more mainstream and,
yes,
acceptable if it's in the Washington Post.
Yes, yes. And she's writing like, you know, she's doing that series, which is on my list to start reading, which is, even though I don't read that much historical, I do want to read it because she's doing that series that's kind of like lightly based on the Kardashians.
I did not know that.
Yes, because instead of like a sex tape, she has it's a painting. Like they do it like a nude painting of the girl, and then it goes outside, and like her reputation are ruined.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so she was talking about how she based it on that, and then she's doing another one based on another one of them. So she's used them as inspiration, which is interesting. I mean, whatever your opinion is on them,
right?
It's an interesting concept.
Yeah, that's a very interesting concept.
Beverly Jenkins is another one that's very interesting to follow because you would call her like an eclectic poster.
Mm-hmm.
Like she'll go and at one point share something about jambalaya that she's eating, or she'll talk about the Jon Snow commercial, the Kit Harington commercial. Mm-hmm. Like she'll come out and say things like that, and then she'll come and say something really deep, and you're like, oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, I think that's the beauty of social media,
yeah,
is it really helps you as the follower to kind of get to know these people,
yeah,
to the detriment of like, yes, being invasive sometimes.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
I was telling somebody else here about another author. I was like, I follow her on social media. I know about her husband. I know about her kids. You,
yes,
know, like I know all these things. And as I say them, I'm like, oh my gosh, this sounds creepy.
Yes, like I'm stalking her.
Yes, but I'm not. It's like these things just show up on my feed, and so I just know them.
Yes. Well, I met one author at a conference, and like we had a moment. Like it was my friend and I. We sat there, and she was there with her husband, and she's, you know, one of those big authors. And we got into a conversation, and we talked, and I follow her, and now I know that she was in there could have been a horrible accident. Like, I know the dog licks the plates. Like, mm-hmm, yeah, so.
Yeah.
It's kind of, and in a way, it's like, it's such a good thing because she shares these things.
Mm-hmm.
She said not only with authors, but with her fans. And it's really nice to see. Like, you see another side, and that's not obviously for everybody because, mm-hmm, some people wouldn't feel comfortable with that. But
right,
if you feel comfortable and that's your way, I think the fans really appreciate it when people do that. So.
Yeah, as a fan and as a reader, I really, yeah, do. Because I feel like, you know, it gives you the opportunity to kind of connect with them and maybe, like, not become friends.
Yeah.
But it also puts that, like, they're mostly just like me.
Yeah.
And then you feel relatable. And that's probably how you build also an audience. Oh, yeah. And you say, like, I read her books. She seems really nice. Mm-hmm. She talks about XYZ. I believe in XYZ also.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, then it becomes more likely that you're going to say to somebody, hey, you might really like this book.
I agree with you. Like, the author I'm speaking about, she talked about how a tree fell mm-hmm. in her house, and she was standing there and it could have fell on her. And she went through this whole story, and it's a relatable story to me because I was at a birthday party in a park and a tree fell mm-hmm. in the middle of the table. So we're having this whole conversation back and forth. And yeah, it made us relatable. I had already known him. So I'm like, you were here for a reason. Like, that's what right. we're saying that to each other back and forth. Like,
yeah.
So it's you know, I do think that the audience comes when they can relate to you, when mm-hmm. they can relate to your characters, not only because, you know, your character is this pretty girl, which I'm not going to lie, my girls are pretty.
They should be.
They're pretty and they got bodies, mm-hmm. like, you know, very nice bodies and stuff like that. And my guys are, you know, they look good naked, really good.
Right.
But, you know, it's still, you can relate to them mm-hmm. in a sense. Like, they have flaws. They have, like, deep, bad flaws, and they have really good things about themselves.
Right. Too, so. Well, I think that's what it is when you have, like, the, you know, the, quote, perfect person, and then they also have no flaws.
Yes.
You're like, what? Why am I even reading this?
Yes.
But if the heroine is beautiful and whatever, but, you know, she's kind of a mess on the inside.
Yes.
Who can't relate to
yes.
that?
Yes.
Or the heroine, or excuse me, the hero has like an 8-pack and is yes. like 7'4", you know.
Yes.
But he's also like kind of a mess too yeah. in some way, shape, you know, or form. Then you're like, okay, I can get with this.
Yeah, because you should. In my opinion, like, what I try to do is that you should be able to see the insecurity, but not let it so much be like it cripples them into like it's such a weakness that
right.
it cripples them emotionally. Like, you should be able to function,
mm-hmm.
like, even though this like you have all this stuff going on in your life. So
right, just like real people. You know,
yes.
like
yes.
on any given day, we could have like some of the insecurities,
yes. Yes.
but yet it's not like crippling.
Yes.
It's just like, okay, I'm like worried about my hair today or something.
And we all do. Like, well, as you saw in this podcast, like you read my thing because I am so extremely self-conscious because I get, as soon as you tell me to read something out loud, I start trembling. I'm like, and then it's like, I start mm-hmm. sweating, so I didn't want you to see me sweating.
It's fine.
Trembling here.
No,
so.
I have, when I was younger, I had a speech impediment because I had hearing issues. Mm-hmm. So I get that. Like, yeah. teachers would call on me and I would like want to cry at school and be like, why are you doing this to me? And still listening to myself on here is kind of weird for me, but I've gotten over it.
Yeah.
But still, it's like, you know, I'm reading that for you, and I'm like, people are going to listen to this and be like, she can't read.
No, so people are going to listen to that. She's talking about, like, don't let your insecurities cripple you, but you can't read your own book.
No. it's just how people are.
It's things. Like, you know, like, just things that everybody have. Like, my mother says everybody has that little thing mm-hmm. about them, and that's just life.
It is. It absolutely is. So you have your book coming out in March.
Yes.
When will your next book be out?
I am not completely sure.
Okay.
But I'm aiming for at some point this year as well. I have three books coming. Mm-hmm. So three is done. I wrote out a sequence, so three is done,
mm-hmm.
and I'm working on two. Two is
okay.
mostly done. So. It should be out at some point this year.
This year. Okay.
2017.
Okay. Do you have any, like, book events that you're going to be signings, anything coming up?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I do. I'm going to be in the Festival of the Book in Charlottesville, Virginia.
Okay.
On March 25th.
Okay.
So, and then I'm going to the publishing seminar in Westminster on April 23rd.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you have a few things coming up. That's awesome. Yeah. And so I'll keep looking for your next book. No pressure.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
So I think that was about all I had today. Thank you so much for coming in and chatting with me.
Oh, you're welcome. This was wonderful. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Okay.
Romance Romp is produced by Graham Cullen and Chris Sands. Theme music provided by Kelsey Luce. Please check out our other podcasts at fnppodcasts.com.